Everybody, welcome to a Friday Sportsline Bulldog Hour. Kevin Horry alongside. We'll take you to three and hand it off to our good friend Phil Bonatti, who is still at the Moscone Center in downtown San Francisco on Radio Row, the last day of his full week there, leading up, of course, to our coverage through Westwood One of the Super Bowl. 11 o'clock in the morning, we'll get started on Sunday, and the kickoff just after 3:30 at Levi's. And so Phil will tell you the latest going on as the Seahawks and Patriots get ready, and actually we'll do the postmortem, and Phil in particular will next week when he's back in town. For us today, Jackson with me, we will put the, I guess, the final bow on everything from signing day. We have talked over and over again that early signing day has really taken the lead in this, but since the time Jackson and I talked on Tuesday, we did have the formal signing day in the first Wednesday of February, so we'll go over everything and kind of put a capper on it until we wait for spring football. And naturally, I'll talk to Jackson about what happened Tuesday, because the last time, Tuesday night, talking about the Bulldog win over UNLV at SMC, because Jackson and I talked leading up to that game, and Jackson was certainly there covering the game, but first time on air, our de facto co-host had been with me. So we'll go over that and preview Nevada tomorrow night at Lawler Center. So we'll get to that. So both football and basketball for Fresno State coming up in just a couple of minutes. But first, before we get there, as always, our lead dogs want to spend some time with you. Want to start with the weather at Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing. Terrific local people. Been in the Central Valley since 1981. You can reach them at 825-5337-825-LEES or on the web at leesair.com. They get there in a big hurry if you give them a call. They are just terrific people. I've had them to do work even during COVID. Very competitive pricing and terrific service. You see the avocado green and blue trucks all over the place. So anything you need, Central Air Plumbing, Heating, or Roofing, give Lee's a call, 825-5337-825-LEES. They also sponsor the Lee's Air Hotline. Jackson is awaiting his on-air appearance on that hotline. And when Phil is in town, and I guess even in San Francisco, he can take the calls on that hotline, which is 1-559-320-1430. So mark that down. As far as the forecast goes, been talking about this all week. The weather, particularly in the afternoon, has been really nice. Now, today it's a little more cloudy than it has been, but still the sun is kind of jumping in and out of those clouds. And across the board, except for the usual problem of fog overnight, early morning hours, particularly in the outlying areas, the afternoon's really pleasant, 70 today, and then a pair of 68s, or actually let's update that to say that at this particular moment, a 70 again on Saturday and a 67 on Sunday now. And then it will go 63 Monday. And then Tuesday, for the first time really since the very start of the new year, we have a chance for rain on Tuesday with a 59 at the high point, and then 57 Wednesday, and maybe another chance, slight chance of showers on Wednesday, and then a 59 on Thursday. Those are not great rain chances, maybe a little bit better on Tuesday than any other time, but right now we'll take whatever we can get, because we not only need more rain after a very strong start to the rainy season, we really have tapered off, and we need not only that moisture as far as the rain goes, but we need snowpack to really step up big here, or we're going to have a very difficult spring and summer. So enjoy it while you're out there. Be careful of the fog, but keep in mind it would be nice to get some precip and some snow up in the higher reaches. Anyway, thanks everybody at Lee's for allowing us the time to bring you the weather. Leesair.com, 825-5337-825-LEES. The other reminder comes from Ed Dunkel and our friends at Precision Civil Engineering. A little bit later in the show, I'll be able to tell you the upcoming schedules, courtesy of Ed, for both 790 and 1430. Reminds you about precision planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape architecture, construction management. It's all there under one roof, 449-4500 or precisioneng.net. For more information, and again, when we go over the schedules, I'll remind you about the terrific fundraising that Ed does for his alma mater, Fresno State, through the Lyles College of Engineering, and in particular, how they go about it by unifying athletics and academics to provide more funding resources to students. It's worked beautifully over the years. And a lot of those graduates from the Lyles College of Engineering on campus go to work for it at Precision Civil Engineering. And again, I'll go over the schedule for the weekend and for the start of next week for both the main stick here at 1430 or our sister station, the Deuce 790. We'll do that later on. Anyway, thanks to Ed, everybody at Precision Civil Engineering. Thanks to our friends at Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing. And along those lines, on the Lee's Air Hotline, it is our de facto co-host, Sir Jackson Moore. Jackson, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
I'm just back from the doctor, so I'm roaring, just roaring and ready to go, Jackson. Just, you cannot imagine the unbridled enthusiasm this day has brought me, all right? So I'm still here, so I guess we got that going for us, right? Or at least I do. You couldn't care less, and I don't blame you. Back at you, by the way. All right. Any update about your Memphis Grizzlies before we get started here? Just curious.
Well, we weren't able to add any more first-round picks for John Morant, apparently. So one Morant still to go.
Well, like I said, he's going to be traded for a first-rounder and a handgun to be named later. I believe that's the case. I'm going to keep taking cheap shots at you, by the way, about this. So we'll see. And I know this, with Jaren Jackson Jr., there's no way in the world your front office was going to deal him to the Warriors no matter what, because you guys are bitter and angry about some unfortunate playoff occurrences in years gone by. Am I right about that?
I would say so. They're off limits for trade.
All right, let's put it this way. Neither of us are exactly rolling in clover when it comes to what's going to happen when we get to the playoffs. So maybe we can arrange a Nerf ball game in the parking lot at Chase Center for the two teams, because that's about as close as they're going to get to an NBA Finals this year. And I'll tell you that right now. All right, that having been said, let's start with football. What, 43 total roster additions, Jackson? Is that where we're at? What was the final number here?
Yeah, 43, it sure sounds like a lot, but it's pretty much the norm these days. And again, Fresno State, not a lot of roster attrition as far as the portal goes. Barely lost anyone of import as far as production goes. Replaced just about everyone who left with an upgrade just about at almost every position, at least relatively to a lot of the reserves that left. But that big senior class that left and a big group of high schoolers, there's, I believe 28 high schoolers coming in. It's a big group. It's they already signed over 20, and then they officially announced a bunch of walk-ons on National Signing Day, so they were able to add to that as well from the high school ranks. And a couple of last names showed up on Signing Day: Darian Anderson, a receiver from Oregon, who was a reserve with the Ducks, and they picked up a running back from Fresno City. I believe he's going to be coming in as a walk-on as well. So. Couple of last-minute additions, but otherwise, they put the final bow on all the guys that were lined up to come back.
Your overview as we await spring. By the way, do we know the time of year, and more particularly spring? We're awaiting spring. And oh, by the way, the football team. The word about spring practice, do we know right now what time they're going to do this calendar-wise?
Yeah, that was probably the more notable part of signing day, was that we did have a long press conference with Coach Ainge. We didn't hear from him back in December when most of these commitments were assigned in the first place. So that was one of the topics of interest. He did say they're planning to start around March 20th, and he said the tentative date for the spring preview was April 25. I don't think they've formalized that or started publicizing that yet, but we've got that marked down, at least for now, until we hear otherwise.
Well, look forward to it. And along those lines, the greatest question marks beyond quarterback. I mean, look, quarterbacking-wise, and let's go ahead and touch upon it, but it's not a revelation. You have two local but inexperienced guys. You have a transfer coming in. But can you say for sure that this position, which obviously is critical, is solidified? Or are you going to say it's still very much in flux and will be that way maybe all the way through fall camp?
Yeah, certainly in flux. It's interesting now, because before, you know, you just would collect as much talent as you could at quarterback, and basically unless you had a starter coming back, it was going to be quite a bit of competition going on. But in this day and age, you've got a group of guys that on the field are going to be competing, but you've also got this chart in your locker room that has your NIL dollars on it and the investment you put in certain players. And Christian Martin coming in from Maryland is certainly going to be at the top of that list for the quarterbacks. But Coach Hintz did say the phrase that I think we all hoped that he would say or anticipated it, was that, you know, they feel good, but they have to see it themselves with their own eyes on the practice field and on Saturdays to make sure he's going to be the guy. They do like Coach Hintz mentioned that Jaden Mandel is back and healthy and working out, so they expect both of them to be very competitive. They're going to let the two true freshmen that are coming in compete. And they mentioned, Coach Hintz mentioned that Jonathan Kraft as well had a good winter, saw some strides from him as well. So all five of those guys are definitely going to be seeing some reps in the spring. You know, on paper, this should result in Martin starting, but that's why they have spring practice and fall camp and everything to determine if that's going to be the reality or not.
Well, we know it's going to be a different situation being in the pack, though. The faces are going to be pretty familiar, not only those coming with you with Fresno State from the Mountain West, but still the Bulldogs beyond that have two teams they have played in the past when they were part of the pack, meaning Oregon State and Washington State. So it's not a brave new world. It is going to be a more competitive conference top to bottom, obviously. And naturally, if you can't get the quarterbacking sorted out, you can have a real battle on your hands. That's applicable for any team. But the one thing I did want to ask you about, before we go over maybe the other positions and the question marks that you might be looking to hopefully get some answers from in spring, although we understand it can be limited there for reps, everything else. But I brought it up yesterday, Ince's comments about NIL and the fact that he doesn't really want to comment on it, that he defers to those on his staff that are in charge of that. And obviously, Matt is ultimately in charge of everything, as we've talked about, the COO of the program, basically. But he doesn't want to make it a day-to-day relationship issue. And he talked about, again, acquisition, retention, and development. And that's basically where we're at. I wanted to ask you, Jackson, that is certainly the intelligent, mature, and proper way to view this. But how much can you turn away from the realities of NIL monies? We talked yesterday about Kelvin Sampson's comments about the University of Houston being poor, which is an amazing statement since you're in the fourth biggest television market in the U.S. and you're part of a P4 conference. But you do have coaches lamenting this. Matt isn't doing that, but how can you talk development, Jackson, without conceding that NIL is going to greatly impact your development? And I'm not criticizing Matt at all. I understand what he's saying. He wants to put blinders on about it. But how difficult or impractical is that in the long term, knowing almost everything you do is going to be predicated upon the monies you have to both acquire and retain personnel while you're trying to develop them?
Yeah, you know, I think it was a good approach for Mintz to describe it that way, because the big part of signing day, both retainment and recruiting, that we were basically expressed to, was it was a lot more about relationships than dollar signs. And obviously you have a situation like Richie Anderson, where dollar signs are going to be so big that relationships aren't going to help you too much at some point. And Fresno State maybe was a little bit fortunate. They didn't have too many guys in that realm. You know, maybe if they have an even better season next year, they might have more of those instances. But as far as this year goes, I mean, you have Josiah Freeman, who reportedly turning down text messages from Ole Miss. And he talked about Rayshon Luke, where Rayshon, you know, everyone kind of saw the potential, but he did come into the program injured last year, didn't compete in the spring, and that was a turnoff for a lot of programs that want to bring in guys, especially back then when you got the spring portal. You know, you could basically see what a guy had, and if it didn't work out, you could get him out of there in the spring portal window. So Bulldogs took a shot on him. He felt like Luke maybe returning that favor to the Bulldogs this time around, coming back for a second year. A lot of the guys, Simeon Harris, Bulldog ties we talked about. And then with the portal, they mentioned that I think it was around 12 or 15 transfers where guys they already had relationships from past stops, or they knew beforehand from the other relationships and recruiting processes. So, and And it's also referred to this process as speed dating when this portal window is so quick from the end of the season to the start of the next semester. You only have about a month to figure all this out. So relationships, keeping players around, relationships, finding new ones that you're comfortable with. And they were able to prioritize that along with enough. I mean, if they had $0 in the NIL coffers, it probably doesn't mean anything. But enough money and enough goodwill can go a long way. Same thing with the coaching staff, only lost one coach of significance. So a lot of retainment, a lot of relationships, a lot of positive vibes for the program. And you want to keep that going as long as you can. And it's tough for a new coach, an unknown face, to come in here and get that going in just a year. But I think Coach Ince was very respectful of the program and fostered a good culture with his new staff that's in place now.
Well, as we were talking the other day, Jackson, you know, the reality that Billy Beane, when he was running the A's, faced, and we had him on air because, you know, people that follow the A's knew that they were a good team, particularly, I mean, they were a great team when they won, you know, back-to-back-to-back titles in the 70s, and very, very good, and should have won more than just one World Series from 88 to 90, but in particular, start of the 2000s, they were still very viable. They lost some real tough playoff series to the Yankees. But Billy Beane knew that every time he got good players, as he got into the 2000s and the money really escalated in Major League Baseball, that he was likely to lose players. So when people came close to their walk year, the A's would have to trade them away for other prospects. And, you know, they became almost, they became the Triple A's, the de facto farm club for the Yankees and others that were going to buy up the players. And I talked to Billy Beane on air, and I've mentioned this many times, and asked him about the inequity and what do you do? And he said, all he can do, because he can't run from it, it's a moneyed aristocracy and we're not part of it. And he said, so you have to embrace the imbalance. You have to embrace the inequity, essentially embrace the unfairness. It's the only way you can compete against it. You can't sit on the sidelines and cry about it. You have to say it's part of what I'm going to have to deal with. Matt is taking the right approach. But what I'm curious about, Jackson, when you try to build, is this going to be an across-the-board problem for the conference itself so that nobody has an inherent advantage? Or are we going to see some school have the benefit of NIL monies that are substantially more than another school, still well within the $20 million cap, but that will have a huge inequity with a school or two in the conference coming up that makes it tough, never mind nationally, tough to win your conference, period?
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet. There's not a whole lot of you know, hoarding by one school or a couple of schools. You know, you see Fresno State battling with a lot of the same schools, and they win some and they lose some. You know, it's not all tilted on one side by any means. I also think, you know, probably the money's not so great that you might lose one there, but you might get someone else that's maybe not as much of a bidding war per se. And I also think looking long-term, you know, there might not be big money, you know, Power Four type money in the conference, but if you've got one school that, say, has $8 million and another that has $4 million, all of a sudden that becomes a problem for you, even though it's not the huge benefactor or anything that's dominating the Pac-12. It could still be something that keeps you from getting talent. So I think in general, the talent pool for Fresno State in the portal is not what it was a couple of years ago before NIL became what it has been, but it also seems pretty comparable to the rest of the pack. I'd be curious to see you know, how this might have turned out if the Bulldogs did have more attrition, if they had to go and, you know, try to find more big-time receivers or offensive linemen. You know, they didn't get have to address that a whole lot in this offseason. They were kind of able to select to some particular needs compared to a school like Washington State or Oregon State that's got 30, 40 transfers coming in. They basically needed a couple of everything, so the longer the Bulldogs can kind of keep this going, the best it can be for the program. It kind of reminds me of, and when Coach Tedford, he had that kind of culture and the established nature of the program when there was a lot of uncertainty. And then we did see when things went a little sideways and he departed, and then there was the uncertainty with Skipper. You know, a lot of that roster did take off good bulk of that starting lineup left. But outside of an unusual event, it seems like the program's in a pretty good place to where they won't have one off season where all of a sudden they need a bunch of players that they're just not a budget for.
Well, we're going to see how things play out in the PAC. I think it's going to be a very well-balanced conference, at least it looks to be the case. Whether it's going to be considered anything beyond a G6 in the long term will have much to do with what is done beyond eight schools. And as you and I were talking the other day, when you're trying to generate revenue, if you're going to do it through your own conference entity for distribution of games, you've given up most of your games to three national distributors, if you will. And because of that, it's going to be awfully tough to generate more revenue, substantially more, no matter what's going on with the Pac-12 network, substantially more revenue within the confines of your own conference when you don't have the inventory. And that's an issue that you and I brought up the other day. And it'll affect the bottom line somewhat, and we're still waiting to get final word. Any idea in your mind about what the monies are going to be? We were just talking yesterday that the SEC made the announcement that the teams were going to make roughly $73 million each school will be from this last year. It's certainly not going to be there, Jackson. Any idea? Well, that'd be great if it were. Any idea where it's going to land ultimately per team?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. It's been pretty hushed so far. You know, they're trying to assemble as many revenue sources as possible. Kind of, you know, what we're seeing with the Mountain West, there was a number of about $3.5 million, but it's not all from the TV deal. It's kind of a combination of a few sources that they're reporting that number on. So I would expect it to be substantially higher than that. I'm not sure if it'll reach, you know, the double million figures like it was maybe projected to be, or at least an estimate of maybe 8 to 12 was kind of the discussion when the pack was coming together. I'd be surprised if it crossed 10, but should be a lot more than what the Mountain West is getting.
Said before, you just couldn't be left behind. I don't care what your misgivings are about the long-term power conference potential for the pack. You just could not be left in the Mountain West. And as we've said, that is, as Mike Tyson said, something that's headed to Bolivia. And I just don't think it's going to be anything more than a glorified Big Sky conference. And that's just the truth of the matter. And that's the reason that the teams that pulled away were the ones that are the most viable ones market-wise. So we'll see, and we will see how the landscape changes across the country as we get to 2031, et cetera. By the way, since we talked about, I was just mentioning Calvin Sampson and, you know, his crying in his beer about the lack of money at the University of Houston, you're well aware of this, Jackson. Everybody shows up at Super Bowl week talking about former players, current players, what have you. They're not playing in the game because they have some corporate sponsor that wants them there. Deion was there looking oddly like the Deion Sanders that played corner for the 49ers in 1994. I'm not so sure if he's been maybe sleeping in the hyperbaric chamber the last couple of weeks because he looked old. He's been looking old as a coach at Colorado, and suddenly with the shades on and everything else, he looked like Neon Deion playing corner for the 49ers back in 94. But he was there hawking California almonds. Okay, that's what Deion was doing. And he made it clear. I mean, he not only brought up California almonds, but then he actually had a bag of California almonds there that he was tossing around to everybody on the panel. So Deion earned his money. But during the time when he spared everybody a few minutes of time beyond just hawking his products there, he brought up again the fact that money is ruling everything and that he's frustrated by it as well, even though he's someone who's been able to draw a lot of NIL money. When you look at this, is everybody going to be satisfied conference-wise if the battle is really within your conference and with the group of five and that you're really not going to spread much farther out of that? Is that good enough for people, do you think?
I think there's an expectation, at least if you're in the Big 12 by Colorado, that you're going to have a couple of teams at least that are going to be national contenders. The Big 12 is
in there. I'm talking about the pack. Actually, not the complaints of Deion. just the pack itself facing the problems that Deion's talking about, and in large measure that Kelvin Sampson, who also is part of the Big 12, is talking about. They're talking about the problems, but they don't land on them. They certainly are not making the money in the Big 12. That's why we said ultimately it's going to be the P2, and then a super conference will be called from the P2. So you're talking about the SEC and the Big 10. So it's almost like tier number two already is where the ACC and the Big 12 exist. But the problems that they are lamenting are really the very real world problems of a group of six school. Is it good enough to be a dominant group of six school if you can't break through that next level, whatever it might be?
Well, I think that's got to kind of be a goal, at least right now, because I don't think even the programs right now are in there. Boise State did have their run two seasons ago, but as far as three-time Mountain West champs go, you know, that would have been a team that would be top 15 weekly for 3 years in a row, where the Broncos kind of snuck in two of those championships. And if you look at Oregon State and Washington State, they look worse off than some of the incoming Pac-12 programs right now. I think also the conference as a whole is its perception. It's not a given right now that the Pac-12 champ is going to be the G6 school that gets into the playoffs. I don't think they're leaps and bounds ahead of the American Athletic Conference until they can put themselves in a position to maybe succeed on poaching a few of those programs. But you know, right now you would assume the representative is probably going to come from one of those two conferences, but you know, it's not necessarily a given. And you do have to have one team that's really putting it together. And we've seen the Mountain West the last couple of years with, you know, whatever it is with the current landscape that's produced it, just an unusual amount of parity. And that's a good thing in some ways, but not as far as having one juggernaut team. It makes it really tough to have a team break away and make a national type run, which, you know, it's better to have more depth, I think, but at the same time, you want to have that one flagship that gets you that notoriety and that gets you a little national attention.
Well, I think all we can be sure about is what we talked about before, and that is save for the very select few that are going to be the upper echelon financially, no matter what, the Ohio States of the world, the Michigans, the USCs, the Alabamas, the Georgias, et cetera, Notre Dame. Those schools are going to be fine no matter what, because the networks are always going to want them and they're going to want to pay major bucks for them. And if it comes to direct streaming to home, they have fan bases that certainly can pay the freight. Outside of those schools, everybody else, Jackson, better be basically kind of hunching down and getting ready for impact, right? Get the tray in the full and upright position and tuck your head between your knees and get ready for impact. Because when we get in the 2030s, nothing that we're seeing now, whether you like it or not, nothing you're seeing now is going to be there in any kind of permanence, that's for sure. That having been said, for where we're going to be in the fall, beyond the quarterbacking, for this moment, what is your biggest concern, or what are your biggest concerns for Fresno State football personnel-wise as we talked in February for the season coming up?
Yeah, well, if you told me, or, you know, you asked me this question right after the bowl game, I'm thinking, you know, they really need to get a number one receiver, and they really need to get a starting right tackle, and those are almost impossible to come by in the portal right now. I mean, there's a ton of receivers, but to get an established one is costs you quite a bit of money, and it's tough to do. Offensive tackles, nearly impossible to get someone that's established at the D1 level. And so to get Josiah Freeman and Roland Fullwood back is just such a godsend for this program going into this next season. It fills maybe two of your biggest holes with two of your most critical players on offense. So that's awesome. There's plenty coming back at running back. When you factor in Fullwood to the O-line, O-line probably would have been my biggest concern, but now you've got three returning starters instead of two. I think Braylon Henderson's probably going to start. Now you're down to basically just one spot you got to figure out all offseason long, which is really a great place for this program to be, considering a lot of the struggles they've had in recent years on the line. I think defensively, maybe just the chemistry. You know, there's a lot of new players coming in that are going to be more thought of as guys that are going to contribute right away. There's a lot of defensive ends, a lot of defensive backs that are going to be implemented into the two deep. You got to replace Jaden Pearson. So it seems like on paper they've got plenty of talent, but I think it's just a little bit of chemistry, and it's easy to take for granted just how a great defense can be. And the numbers that Fresno State put up last year are definitely great, but there's just not quite as much carryover, I think, on defense as there is on offense. There's so just kind of getting the defense together, getting the new guys on the same page, and trying to get to the same level they were last year. And hopefully with enough continuity on offense, they can buy the defense a few extra possessions that they didn't come through with this last year.
Well, the defense, as we have stated over and over again, outside of just a couple of brief instances, and Colorado State would be one, absolutely outstanding and carried the day. And Nick and company deserve a lot of credit for everything they did to make that defense what it was. By the way, James from Clovis emailed in and said, yeah, about bracing for impact. He said, ever since things blew up in the Pac, the original Pac-12, he goes, I've been in the fetal position, so it's very easy for me to tuck my head between my knees. Okay. So, all right, good for you, James. I'm not so sure I can get there, Jackson. You know what I mean? Not so sure that would work out. I could give it a try. But paralyzed with fear, I think I can do that one okay. All right, as far as the actual physical manifestation of it, I don't know about that. I'm going to redo Lost, I guess, on ABC. Maybe you and I in Lost. How about that? You, me, and Evangeline Lilly in Lost. Would that be okay? I think it'd work out all right. All right. Don't you dare. All right. Listen, before we wrap it up on the day, I do want to get to basketball. And I know it's been 3 days now. It seems like it's been a month. But when I talked to you, the last thing I said to you when we wrapped up the visit on Tuesday was, I said, so you're going to be threading your heart away for that Fresno State game. And you said, yep, against UNLV. Could you have ever foreseen what you were going to be ultimately threading last Tuesday, Jackson?
Oh, no way at all. The game, from my standpoint at least, having to deal with signing day for football, it's almost an afterthought. I was hoping to kind of get in and out of there, get my story done, get some rest. And the next thing I know, it was probably the latest night I've ever had at the St. Mark's Center. And I was just about over with this whole thing with about 3 or 4 minutes left. It had taken so long, it dragged out so long, and you couldn't ever have anticipated it was going to end the way that it did. But the one thing that kept buzzing in my mind was just seeing UNLV's foul trouble and how many players were exiting the court. It just felt like the more Rebel reserves you could get on the court, maybe there's going to be more mistakes to be made. And we saw it with a bunch of flagrant fouls and the full court pass, and they just squeezed the window open just enough for the Bulldogs to get it done. And that was one of the most spectacular games. Even in the first half alone, it was, 50-49. It was a lot of entertainment and back and forth and physicality, and the crowd. It was not the largest crowd of the last few games, but probably the most invested of them, the way that the two teams were going at it. So it was already an awesome game in its own right, but just a finish that was unbelievable, and one I won't be forgetting anytime soon.
Wildly entertaining, wildly maddening, wildly everything. And as I mentioned to Fertig on Wednesday, maybe without some sort of logistic problem, because there wasn't, again, a shot clock malfunction or a rim that was off or, a backboard broke, something that would have stopped the action itself. The game itself, from the time it started to the time it ended, the only delays were the things within the confines of the administration of the game, meaning fouls or reviews or what have you. I would purport to you, Jackson, that may have been, stem to stern, the longest regulation game in the history of the NC2A. I don't know if they've ever kept records about the true actual running time, not merely the time the game started, the time it ended, because you could have had that kind of delay in there, right? But a game that didn't have an external delay, but all the administration of the game turned a 40-minute game into a three-hour game. I don't ever remember a game taking that long without some sort of external problem. Can you remember one, since you're older than I am? He says with a laugh.
I do not. I can't imagine that it could have even been possible before the whole replay review and the challenges. And you know, that's not, it wasn't brand new on Wednesday, but it felt like it was 10 times more than we've ever seen at the St. Mark Center. So at some point, I remember in the second half, so just someone in the crowd just, you know, get it over with. Like, stop reviewing all these plays. And just finish this darn game. It's taking forever.
Sounds like one of my dates in college, Jackson. Someone yelling, get it over with. Okay. Thank you very much. Drive safely. I'm here all week, everybody. Along those lines, Casey Jacobson, of course, doing color commentary, said that he believes he talked to the one referee 11 times during the game, he said. But look, they won the game, and that's all that counts. Although I was thinking, Ferdinand and I had talked about John Drew, who played for the Atlanta Hawks, came out of Gardner-Webb, a very talented player, but was dumb as a bag of rocks, okay? Hubie Brown, the coach, used to call him cement head. I would say this, UNLV, I'm not talking about their intelligence, but their comportment with a lead may have been as cement-headed as I've ever seen as a group, because you talk about a team that met the enemy in the last 5 minutes, and it was them. Could they have done any more to undermine their own chance for victory than the Rebels did in that last 5 minutes, Jackson?
Not at all. And at least the UNLV's defense, you know, those weren't the guys they wanted to have out there. The foul trouble was bizarre to have that many guys exit, especially on the winning team when you're not intentionally fouling like that at the end of the game. They were already missing Tyron Jones. I was, you know, I'm never going to poo-poo a win like that, but I did expect them to be a little more in control without Tyron Jones. And as good as Draw Gibbs Lawhorn was, to have him off the court for 8 minutes with no Tyron Jones, I felt like if you would have told me that before the game, Bulldogs would have been in pretty good shape and not needed a miracle. But thankfully, they erased their shortcomings there in the last couple of minutes. And fortunately, the Bulldogs had more of their stars on the court than UNLV did at the end. And I think that basketball IQ was a big determiner in the final few minutes there.
Well, I'll tell you what, had they not left Hyde Breeder open for what was essentially a pretty easy jumper, in all honesty, and the game then would have gone overtime, I don't know how in the world UNLV could have won that game in OT. I'm not sure. I think the equipment manager would actually have been starting at point guard by that point when they got to the start of OT, because they did have literally nobody left to play that game. Now, great win because you needed it. We talked about it from a contextual standpoint. UNLV came in here having been blown out three games prior, including two at home. So they had not been going great guns. The Bulldogs now try to take the momentum on their side, understanding that this was not a dominant performance against UNLV, but it was a tremendous comeback and a gutty effort. But you go on the road now, you play a Nevada team tomorrow, a team that you lost a lead, a five-point lead in the last few minutes here, and lost a game you really should have won back on January 3rd. And then on Tuesday, you go to Logan to play Utah State, and I would purport that you could send any team in the country into that environment on Tuesday, and they'd have one hell of a battle against Utah State. Jackson, how important is it that they find a way to get one at the Lawler Center tomorrow so that they don't come home off of this road trip at 0-2, and then that kind of quells some of the momentum you have from UNLV? How important is it that they can get this one tomorrow if you believe they can?
Yeah, I think they're gonna come in with some confidence after the way that last game ended and how close the Nevada game was earlier this year. I know they have, especially Coach Wahlberg, has really lamented the fact that they felt they let that one get away. They've been thinking about this game for quite some time. But I think I almost look at this group of games as probably I know it's home and away, but a three-game stretch. I felt like they had to get at least one of UNLV and Nevada and avoid a three-game losing streak coming home after that series of games, because I don't see them beating Utah State at all. So even this game against Nevada, looking singularly at it, I think they're going to be pretty significant underdogs when the line comes out. I'm looking at ESPN. They've got the Bulldogs with about a 13% chance of winning this game. I think the biggest difference from this one to the last one was that Corey Camper in that game for the Wolfpack was not really himself, came off the bench, played about half the game. And this is a guy that scored 35 points in his last game and 32 before that. He's 10 of 17 from three-point range. So if he's hot, it's going to be tough for the Bulldogs to answer that. You got to cross your fingers that he's cold and you can kind of have a similar muddy grit and grind type of game like the last one was, low scoring perhaps in the 60s like it was, and try to finish it off this time around. But yeah, I don't see Utah State being a win. Again, if they come out of this road trip, even with two losses, I think getting the UNLV game, being 1-2 in that stretch, is still decent enough, all things considered.
Well, I think to be pragmatic about it, I think your points are well taken. If you can play a competitive game tomorrow and give yourself the kind of chance to win that you had at home on Jan 3 against this club, Nevada, even if you don't get it done, I do think you come home feeling a little bit better. What you don't want to do is go on the road now and get blown out twice. Because if you do that, then people say, well, okay, it was more about UNLV than it was you then with your victory. You want this fan base to start to believe that, again, the light at the end of the tunnel is not an oncoming train. And they're making progress toward that. But it's a very difficult road trip, and Tuesday is going to be monumentally difficult. I think it's fair to say, Jackson, though it will be a surprise, and I'll make this clear, a surprise if they win. They do, I believe, have at least a puncher's chance on Saturday. Do you agree with me about that?
I believe so. I wouldn't be overly stunned. I think they can definitely keep this one close and put themselves in the slot to try to get it done at the end. I would be shocked if they won at Utah State. I think that team with that crowd and that environment, and that can get to you. We've seen them already have troubles. Even, you know, it was without Zion, but they weren't very competitive at New Mexico or at San Diego State, and I think that game is of a similar type of prestige and competition level. I think Nevada's, you know, just enough there where they Bulldogs play their A game, they can get out of here with the win, but you know, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, Tuesday, you just try to keep it respectable. That's all you can do. And you did score-wise against Utah State here, but Utah State was never threatened down the stretch. But if you can keep it as close as you did at home, that would be fine. That's going to be really tough. So there's a lot riding, I think, emotionally on what happens tomorrow night. It's not the end of the world if you don't win. And like you mentioned, you are not at all thought to have much of a chance. But I think if you can have a credible effort, then you're building upon what happened Tuesday. And maybe you look back at Tuesday and say, okay, that was the one that turned it in the long term. A lot of ground, however, to be covered between the end of the season and what's going on right now. Jackson, I appreciate it. I'll talk to you on Tuesday. What's going on the board here specials-wise?
Yeah, it's currently we've got 50% off a year. If you want to join and lock in for spring football now that we've got a date and the rest of the offseason, everything that will come over the course of 2026, it comes out to just a little over $5 a month to join on that deal.
Well worth it. Check it out at barkboard.com. And as I let you go, old de facto co-host of mine, who wins on Sunday?
I'm going with the Seahawks. I'm not sure what the line is, but it seems like they're pretty heavy favorites from the perception of things.
I would agree with you, although I think there's a possibility that the 49ers may be able to win it, except Roger Craig will fumble in the last moments and completely screw things up. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. This is not January in 1991. That's my way of saying congratulations, my good friend Roger Craig. I'm so proud that you're in the Hall of Fame. I'm never going to get over it, Jackson. You know that. I'll talk to you on Tuesday, my friend. Take care.
All right. You too, Tony. Thank you.
All right, Jackson Moore, barkboard.com. We'll take a break, come back, wrap it up with the schedule, and complain about Roger Craig one more time. I'm really happy that he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I would be even happier if he wouldn't have run straight upright with 2 minutes and 38 seconds to go in a first down, and all you had to do was hold on to the football to run out the clock, and then you could have gone to Tampa and beaten Buffalo and had the three-peat, the first and only three-peat in Super Bowl history. And, of course, Rodgers' response, yeah, the guy made a good play to my Eric Howard who caused the fumble, and I was over it the next day. Like I said, Roger was over it the next day. It has been now over 35 years, and I'm still not over it, and he's going to the Hall of Fame. Of course, then again, he had talent, so maybe he had that going for him, but I'll never see that even with the Hubble telescope. All right. Take a break. Come back with more. Bulldog Hour continues on this Friday on Central Valley Sports Leader, 1430 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. 2:53. A few minutes ago on the show, I handed off to Phil. His outstanding show, Behind the Bench, still at the Moscone Center in downtown San Francisco on Radio Row, the last day of the coverage that Phil has given you all week long leading up to the Super Bowl on Sunday. That is on our air on Westwood One. Of course, it's also on NBC television. The Olympics, by the way, already underway. The opening ceremonies from Milan, Italy, 10:40 this morning. It started on Peacock. And, of course, the network will have some tape delay stuff and some live stuff. So I'm not so sure that NBC wanted the Super Bowl at the same time as the Olympics, but that's how the rotation worked with the Super Bowl being shared by all the networks. By the way, ABC and ESPN get their first crack at it next week, their first crack since they used to have it a long time ago in this current rotation. They're actually going to have that 24-hour handoff on ESPN from Levi's to SoFi, because that's where Super Bowl 61 is going to be, and we'll see how they handle that thing. It's going to be one nonstop promotional package, and anybody knows Disney knows that Disney knows how to promote. So we'll see what they're going to do with that. But anyway, a very busy weekend sporting-wise, and I'll tell you all about the schedules for both 790 and 1430 and what's going on around Fresno State in just a second. It's brought to you by our buddy Ed Dunkel and his outstanding business, Precision Civil Engineering. Again, planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape architecture, construction management, all they're under one roof. More information, 449-4500 or precisioneng.net. And again, we commend Ed for all the great fundraising he does for the Lyles College of Engineering there on campus at Fresno State. Ed, a proud graduate. The goal, as always, to unify athletics and academics to provide more funding resources to students. It's worked beautifully over the years, and a lot of those grads from the Lyles College of Engineering head off to Precision Civil Engineering, a terrific company that benefits the Valley in so many ways. Now, as far as the schedule goes, on our air, mentioned Phil coming up. When we're done, he'll have a couple of hours for you, and then he's back next Monday, and he'll tell you all about his times, I'm sure, in San Francisco at that point. Super Bowl again on Sunday, 11 a.m. on 1430, the kickoff just after 3:30. Today on 790, you have Fresno Pacific baseball at 5 o'clock. You've also got both men's and women's basketball for FPU over the weekend. The Lakers play over the weekend against the Warriors, 5:30, a 5:15 pre on Saturday. So a busy weekend for us in addition to the Super Bowl. And we want to remind you, of course, about the daily shows each and every day. We're with you at 2 o'clock. You can reach me, TDAD1 at ATT.net, TDAD, the number one at ATT.net. Phil normally 3 to 6 with his fine show Behind the Bench, including Thursdays at Fashion Furniture with our good friend Rod Avedikian. Best furniture on the planet. The great sales going on right now at Fashion Furniture El Paso across from River Park. Nothing like it in all of California. The best furniture you're going to find. Some good eats when Phil is there. And always the Lee's Air hotline to reach Phil, 559-320-1430. Paul Metters, two fine shows. I mentioned Fresno Pacific. He has Sunbird Sports Show, 6 to 7 in the evenings on Wednesday on 790. Check that out, all about what's going on at FPU. And then on Saturday mornings, his long-running show, live from First Ring Sports, 10 a.m. to noon on 1430, Central Valley Sports Report. Everything for the station, 1430 ESPN, Fresno.com. You'll find the live links and podcasts there. Get the app. Makes it a lot easier to listen. The final reminders, other than the thanks that go out to the sponsors, to Ed Dunkel, Precision Civil Engineering, to our friends at Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing, but naturally, they also go out to Jorge for his great job on the board and to our de facto co-host Jackson Moore for, again, making time to give us his terrific information for Fresno State. Want to remind you about the Fresno State lineup. Again, the basketball team, 7 o'clock tomorrow night on TheMW.com from the Lawler Center in Nevada in Reno. It'd be a real good idea to get one. And they're big underdogs, but I think they've got a shot at it. They've got that tough game against the best team in the conference, Utah State, coming up in Logan on Tuesday. So this is the one you want to get. The women's basketball team is home against Nevada tomorrow at SMC at 3 o'clock. And speaking of home at 3 o'clock, in about 2 minutes, the softball team opens up with their kickoff classic at home at Margie Wright Diamond. They'll have a doubleheader today and a doubleheader tomorrow. So you've got softball underway, and the baseball team in 1 week on the 13th will also start play over at Biden Bennett. So we have hit the spring, even though it's still winter. Let's get some rain. I'm like Harry Carey. Hey, everybody, let's get some rain. If we can get some rain, everything's going to be good. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl and enjoy Phil coming up from San Francisco. All about it in just a couple of minutes on KFIG Fresno.